You've been listening to Labrish. The program will be back next week following the work of the Midnight Ravers. Stay tuned for Back of the Book, WBAI 99.5 FM New York and WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. Back of the Book.
Right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all. I must not whine and whine and whine about the early sunsets. Oh, but they're so early in the afternoon. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
Indeed. And we're going to talk about various things on this program, and you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com, and you can look around at things up there. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen that says Latest Back of the Book Program Links. And you click on that, and you'll get to the webpage for tonight's program. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 68th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning, so if things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but we have to do it this way in these dangerous times. And the number one story worldwide on this planet for the past week is we have rocketed up to 117 followers on Twitter. And people are amazed at this. It's such a gigantic number. But in all modesty, we won't say any more about it. The next WBAI local station board meeting is scheduled to be held on December 8th, 2021. That's a Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Zoom. In fact, that's this coming Wednesday. Another meeting. And we do it on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The 12th WBAI local station board will be seated at that December 8th meeting. There is a delegates assembly meeting, which is for the 11th LSB. How can that be? And that's scheduled on that date as well. So we have an odd mix of the 11th and 12th LSBs going on December 8th. And, you know, how kosher is that? I'm not entirely sure, but there we go. Jesus Christ. Anyway, the WBAI local station board met this past Monday, November 29th, in executive session, quote, to discuss personnel matters, unquote. Which isn't quite the notice that's required, but that's the notice that's officially up there, and I'm not going to be able to add a whole lot to that because, hey, you know, you get in trouble and people start denouncing you, and, oh, he let everybody know the big confidential stuff. You know, they'll do that even if there's no confidential stuff involved, but this is what you have in Pacifica governance. Anyway. The report out from that meeting, which ought to have been posted by now, but which hasn't been, there's still time to get it posted, is that, quote, the WBAI local station board met an executive session to discuss personnel matters of a confidential nature, unquote. And I can't talk about what may or may not have been personnel matters of a confidential nature on the air, but I can say that the meeting was a total mess and was not at all productive in my personal opinion. And we'll just leave it at that. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 264,743,026 on Friday. And global deaths reached 5,240,971. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 48,918,222, and the death toll in America had reached 786,898. So, 10,625 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. And that's a significant increase over the previous week's numbers. I wonder if lots of people traveling by air and going places and getting together for the Thanksgiving holiday had anything to do with that. This past Sunday, a huge number of people in America traveled back from their holidays by air and all jammed in together and all of that. And some of these family reunions that we had over Thanksgiving may be the final ones for some participants who are going to get COVID-19 and croak. I'll also note that we had college football going on, and you see tens of thousands of people jammed in together. And I don't know, did you see a whole lot of masks in those crowds?
I saw barely any masks.
Yeah. And so there's that. All these people jammed in together, jumping up and down, breathing on each other, and we have something that's more infectious than chickenpox moving through the world, and they're doing all of this. So, oh boy, yeah, let's just say who cares, you know? By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we've quoted will be higher, of course. Again, this was all mostly preventable. It could have been stopped at the source, and it could have been dealt with. And America, instead of having the highest infection in the world, could have mostly stopped it. It is just amazing to me that this has happened, and at some point, some people are going to start writing books about this pandemic, and in the future, assuming there's a future, people are going to look at this and say, what the hell was happening? Was there some other virus that caused mass stupidity in America and also among the people running the Communist Party of China, and what was going on here? You know, it's obviously you would try to fight a serious disease. Instead, they let it become a pandemic, and America, which has the biggest wherewithal of all these countries, was saying, oh, don't do this. Use hydroxychloroquine. Hey, could we, like, inject bleach into people's lungs and fix all it? And, Jesus Christ, it is amazing, isn't it? And the still new Omicron variant, and yes, I say Omicron because I've been pronouncing the 15th letter of the Greek alphabet Omicron for decades and decades, more than half a century, I'm sure. Yes, and other people are pronouncing it Omicron, which is acceptable, but, you know, they do it on TV because they've never heard the word before, and then they go with it. Oh, well. The still new Omicron variant remains a bit of a mystery in some ways. I've read, by the way, that they did not name it after the next letter in the Greek alphabet because they didn't want to confuse that letter with the English word new, N-E-W, which was one of my speculations on the last program. So this variant of concern, as it's called by the World Health Organization, does seem to be even more transmissible than the Delta variant, which itself was described as even more infectious than chickenpox, to name a virus that is very infectious and quite familiar to a whole lot of people. It's not yet clear if the Omicron variant can get around the current vaccines. It's possible that it may not have the devastating effects that Delta and previous variants have had, but these are still early days. It does seem to have become the dominant variant in southern Africa. Markets around the world are still quite volatile over this variant's effect on the world's economy and what people think might happen with the world's economy. Another big deal right-wing evangelical Christian who proselytized against vaccines has died after being hospitalized with COVID-19. Marcus Lamb, founder and CEO of Daystar Television, was 64 this past week when he croaked. Daystar is the second largest Christian TV station in the world, and they've used their broadcasts to tell people to not get vaccinated against COVID-19. Apparently, this Daystar network reaches 2 billion people worldwide. When the pandemic started, Marcus Lamb and his network preached about anti-vaccine conspiracies. And I guess they got a lot of this crap just scraping things off the internet. And they hosted a lot of interviews with anti-vaxxer cuckoos and railed against lockdowns. And I think I know a radio station where some anti-vaxxer cuckoos get to vent their nonsense. And on this Daystar thing, reaching 2 billion people a day, they railed against lockdowns, which were designed to deal with the spread of the disease. Earlier this month, the son of the CEO, Jonathan Lamb, said about his father's battle with COVID-19, quote, "There is no doubt in my mind that this is a spiritual attack from the enemy," unquote. Yeah, God, the enemy, you know, the devil's doing it. It's the devil. It can't be a virus, can't be something related to reality. It's got to be something that fits within their economics where they tell people, you know, send us $100 and we'll give you a piece of the true cross or something, which is stuff I've actually seen pretty close to being done. Anyway, the son was also asking for prayers for his father's recovery. They don't seem to have worked. The Daystar network pushed so-called alternative treatments for COVID-19. Yeah, again, I could name a radio station that's full of crap like that. Including unproven treatments such as hydroxychloroquine rather than vaccination. Marcus Lamb's wife said that he reportedly tried some of those remedies, but did not recover. What a surprise. And as if there isn't enough happening with the pandemic and anti-vaxxer cuckoos and all sorts of stupidity going on when we could have stopped this or we could have really slowed it way down and we would not have over 5.2 million people dead in the world right now. We also have some vectors to worry about. And a vector is what it's called if a disease gets to come from one place to another, usually one species to another. It is believed by many that COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, came from bats in China and infected humans. This happens a lot. You can find that Ebola has a reservoir, a vector, in some bats in Central Africa. And when people get infected with it and they go in and they shut it down and they you know, fix people up and they bury the dead because Ebola is really bad. When they do all of that and they've cleared it out, there are still some bats running around, flying around in the forest. And so at some point, one of them is going to bite somebody and it will start all over again. So you have to deal with that. And having a vector, having an animal vector for a disease is bad news. And it's sort of like bubonic plague has a vector. The real vector is a tick, a louse on a rat. And when the rat, for one reason or another, sheds some of these lice, they get on human beings, they bite the person, and bang, the bubonic plague happens. Vectors are a problem with any disease. And I'm using as my source here an article in the Science Times by Andrew Jacobs, and it says, a new study of hundreds of white-tailed deer infected with the coronavirus in Iowa has found that the animals probably are contracting the virus from humans and then rapidly spreading it among one another, according to researchers. And it appears that up to 80% of the deer sampled from April 2020 through January 2021 in Iowa were infected. So that's 80% of the white-tailed deer in Iowa are infected with COVID-19. And however, so far, there is no evidence that deer have passed the virus back to humans. That's good. Because if they just get it and it, you know, they have it and they don't pass it back, that's good. On the other hand, if they have it and they're passing it around, that means it's going to mutate. And the current situation where they're not passing it to humans could change. And, you know, with these vectors, we've already had one serious vector that was seen for COVID-19, and that is the mink, those little things that they raise and then kill and make mink coats out of. Last year, Denmark slaughtered its entire population of 17 million farmed mink after scientists discovered they could pass the virus back to people. So you don't want those damn things hanging around. And there's also, you know, speculation if the virus were to become endemic in wild animals like deer and just stay there, it could evolve over time to become more virulent and then infect people with a new strain capable of evading the current vaccines. So this is the big thing. And currently, it is estimated that there are 38 million white-tailed deer in America, and they could become this lasting reservoir for COVID-19. And that would be very bad news. So, oh boy, let's hope something can be done about that. They're trying to educate the deer hunters in Iowa. God, people just stick to whatever they do. They're trying to educate them to, you know, be careful and wear a mask and wear gloves. They're not going to do that. They want to be butch. And, you know, wearing a mask and gloves doesn't seem butch to a lot of these people. So they don't do it. And if you cook the meat, by the way, if you cook it enough, like you should cook all meat, which is get it to be 165 degrees Fahrenheit in the middle, then you're okay because that wipes out any virus. But then you have the fact that it's also butch to have basically rare meat. And rare in some cases means you just char the outside and the inside remains just exactly as it had been. This is not something I like to eat, but this is what some people like. And so you got this going on. And, oh boy, it's one of those things that makes you say, oh, good grief. I mean, here's a thought. What if, like, pigeons began catching COVID-19 and could spread it to people? In Brooklyn, we'd be wiped out and nothing flat, I think, because we got, you know, millions and millions of pigeons here flying around. But you can think of any animal that we interact with, and this could be a bad thing. And here on Back of the Book, we frequently recognize people's birthdays and give them a merry birthday wish. And gee whiz, let's look and see who it might be whom we're going to wish a merry birthday. Oh, why, look, it's Radio's Pickles of the North. Oh, my. Well, merry birthday, my dear.
Thank you very much, my dear.
And we're also looking at some things related to age that she has to deal with in terms of bureaucracies that are really bad.
Yes, I told my mother now she has two officially senior citizen children. So
yes, and you and I are now officially an elderly couple.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Isn't that great? And, of course, we have a tradition here on Back of the Book. When it's somebody's birthday, we get the Beatles to sing them a song. So, hey, guys, take it away.
You know, I'm glad to be celebrating a pandemic birthday because the alternative would not be good.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, and the deer passing the virus back and forth and everything else, my parents are very disappointed that I'm not going to be joining them for the holidays. And a number of weeks ago, I made the decision, this is not a good time to travel. And the reason being, they are, if you and I are, Paul, are elderly, they are super elderly. I mean, 88 and 91, and I do not want to bring them anything. And now would be, would it be Delta or, you know, the new virus I'd be bringing, the new version of the virus I could possibly bring to their doorstep, and I don't want to do that. They're very disappointed. I think they sort of understand. But I wonder, you know, Friday, they had a big luncheon at their church. 40 people. They put the tables apart, but they're all sitting there with their masks off, eating their boxed lunches. And not all of them have had their booster shots. Hey, I don't even know if all of them have been vaccinated because they don't get to ask people if they've been vaccinated or not. Apparently, the diocese said, no, you can't ask people that. You just have to let them into the church. So I hope they survive this gala event.
Oh, boy.
It's very frustrating. I think even though they've been living with this for the past 2 years now, it is not real to them. It's not real to them in the way that it's real to us, you know, having people, when you have people die of COVID in your building. We were talking about this with our dear friend Uncle Sydney the other day. You know, it becomes real to you when you hear the ambulances going back and forth, you know, lights blinking, sirens blaze for hours and hours. That becomes real to you that this is a serious thing and people are getting really sick and dying from it. Anyway.
And that's not happening, apparently. Well, your parents live in a place which is like, I don't know, it abuts like a park or something or a reservoir or something. And so it's not a place where you would get the ambulances rushing through.
No.
Whereas in Brooklyn, in Brooklyn, we got a lot of big streets and, you know, we're close enough to some hospitals that they go running past and we got to hear them a lot.
Yeah, and I think they just don't have any actual personal interaction with people who've been sick. Or people who have lost, although a family member was lost and, you know, it's been rationalized. Oh, well, she was very old anyway. She had other things wrong with her. Yes. However, those things were not killing her. The virus killed her. So,
yeah.
So I won't be home for Christmas. You can't count on me. But I hope at some point to see them again, you know, when things are not as uncertain, unstable. As they are, especially right now.
Indeed. And, of course, as sort of mentioned at the top of this program, the sun is now setting at 4:28 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The earliest sunset of the year in this area. This deplorable condition will keep on going for about 10 days or so. The winter solstice will occur on December 21st at 1 minute to 11 o'clock in the morning. And I have all of these seasons and sub-seasons up on my website, and you could look at all of them. You could look at all of them going into the past for quite a number of years and going from now into the future for about 4 or 5 years. So, we just have to suffer through it every year that these depressing very early sunsets happen at this time of year. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And speaking of way up north, Canada's House of Commons voted unanimously this past Wednesday to ban so-called LGBT plus infinity, quote, conversion therapy, unquote, for minors. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau took to social media Wednesday afternoon to say, quote, good news. Today, members of Parliament worked together to pass our government's legislation banning conversion therapy, and it is now headed to the Senate. We'll keep working to make this abhorrent and unacceptable practice prohibited in Canada, unquote. Of course, in America, some places still endorse this barbaric procedure based on homophobia and hate. Yeah, people such as former Vice President Mike Pence used to push this in Michigan. In fact, he took funding from the government that was supposed to go for education on HIV, and he put it towards promoting conversion therapy, as they call it, which is where, oh, we're going to make you not gay anymore. Oh, God, it's so stupid. I've known people who've had to go through that back in like the 40s and the 50s. And, oh, man, it really messes people up. And this is bad stuff. So I'm glad that all of Canada is going to ban this terrible thing. And there's something good. And not every place is as enlightened as our neighbors up north. Indeed, the Moscow-based business newspaper Vedomosti Daily has reported that the Russian Interior Ministry is looking into a complaint against Netflix filed by Olga Baranets, the public commissioner for protecting families. And this Baranets person is taking issue with how the platform, Netflix, is marking some of its LGBT plus infinity themed content. According to current laws, so-called, quote, deviant, unquote, content should be marked with an 18 plus rating. But according to the commissar, some titles from Netflix's, quote, colorful collection of films and TV series that tells us about the lives of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people, unquote, are being marked with a 16-plus rating. What a bunch of ex-commie creeps over there. Yeah, Russia's gay propaganda law, as they have it, outlaws public discussions or positive messages about LGBT plus infinity issues. This is, you know, well, they certainly never had a First Amendment in Russia in any of its, you know, incarnations. The first Russian Empire didn't have it. The second Russian Empire, sometimes referred to as the Soviet Union, didn't have it. And the current Russian Empire has certainly made a point of not allowing free speech. So, God damn, you can't even talk about stuff or you can get arrested. And yeah, this is Russia, all right. And there are still people at BAI who will defend Russia. I mean, there are even more of them who still defend the old Soviet Union, which is just the second Russian Empire. Oh, well. So, yeah, another reason to not like Russia and wish they would get rid of people like Putin and those other bastards. And in more political news, in the United States of America, the House and Senate have passed a stopgap spending bill late Thursday evening and averted a short-term shutdown scheduled for just after midnight on Friday. And so the United States government is not shut down while you're listening to this program being broadcast on Saturday morning. And the funding will allow the federal government to remain open through February 18th. Oh, boy. After leaders defused a partisan standoff over federal vaccine mandates. So what happened was the Republicans, of course, some of the really far right wing ones were saying, yeah, we don't want any vaccine mandates or any kind of COVID stuff going on. We don't want to have a thing where you got to be vaccinated to do certain things. So we're going to shut down the government for that. Well, of course, that would be something that would be not smart politically. And while a lot of the Republicans, even the used to be mainstream Republicans, are still kissing Donald Trump's fat ass, they are still politicians, and they still look and they say, oh, gee whiz, look at the numbers of people getting vaccinated. Look at the polls of how people feel about vaccinations. Most people want to get vaccinated, and a lot of people are. And if we're going to say, no, we can't have, you know, the government doing something that could be said to be trying to prevent disease, and we're going to shut the government down for it, yeah, the Republican Party might not look so good, and we do want to do something in the upcoming midterm elections, something other than be thrown out of office, which I wish they would. Anyway, so they looked at it, and they were able to get enough Republicans to vote for all of this to get it to go through. Still, loads of Republicans voted against it. Loads of Republicans said, yeah, we want to shut down the government because we want to have, as a trading thing, it's not even in this bill, as a trade-off, no more vaccine mandates from the government, and we'll let the government continue to function. Well, you know, that's politics, but it's pretty crummy politics, people, let me say. And in perhaps somewhat bizarre news, we have the FBI is investigating a big hole in a beach on Long Island. Yeah, it is a big hole. It's actually a crater out on Long Island, and it's like 4 feet wide, and the FBI is interested in this. They think somebody set off an explosive right there. And I think somebody came up in a boat, put an explosive on the beach, went away and blew the explosive. And the FBI is looking at it because what if this is some bunch of idiots deciding to prepare to blow up something serious? It's not that big a deal to blow up some sand, especially on some deserted beach in Long Island. But, you know, they might be looking for a bigger target. So the FBI is looking to see what the hell's going on here. I don't know if they have any real hope of finding who set off whatever this was there, but they're going to look. Now, one explanation for the little hole in the beach on Long Island is some idiot trying to test his bomb out. You know, it could be some pyromaniac wanted to blow something up, or it could be people want to go do bad things. On the other hand, what if it came from outer space? Oh, my. Anyway, there is the fact that there are things called near-Earth objects, NEOs, and yeah, they're all over the place. Stuff is hitting our atmosphere at every second of the day, and almost all of it is teeny-weeny. In fact, various radio amateurs and even the United States military and maybe some other militaries around the world use meteor scatter to get longer range with their radios. And meteor scatter happens when you get a meteor comes into the atmosphere, and when it does, it gets burnt up, and it's ioned. It becomes ionized. The atoms of it, it gets burned up, and the atoms are ions, and ions will reflect an electromagnetic wave because they're charged. And so you bounce your radio off that, and they've been doing this for decades and decades. And radio amateurs were thrilled when they found that they could do this, and I think it was post-World War II, and other people took note of it. We see Meteor Crater in Arizona. There's an even bigger, more impressive one up in Canada, and that one actually became the site of an iron mine. There's a mine that's been going on there for years and years and years and years, and it was only when people looked at it from very high up that they said, hey, look, it's a big circle. And then scientists looked at it and realized it's a meteor crater. It got hit by a big meteor. Or at that point, it's an asteroid. And of course, we all know that the dinosaurs got to say, hey, what's that coming down in the sky? I'm sure the dinosaurs spoke exactly that way. And, you know, blam, and then the dinosaurs were gone, except for the birds. And so, yeah, an asteroid hitting the Earth is something serious. And although I must say again, some politicians have tried to shut down efforts to watch these things. And this past week, the NASA has launched the Double Asteroid Redirection Test Mission, called DART, D-A-R-T. And this is a test to see what they can do about an asteroid that might be dangerous. Because as I say, there are just tens of thousands of asteroids that are whipping around that could hit the Earth. Luckily, not many do. We saw in Chelyabinsk some years ago where one, nobody had detected it. Nobody knew it was there. It wasn't that big, but it hit the atmosphere, and it exploded at about 15 miles up. And the reason they explode like that is because they're not made of stuff that's really hard, and they come in and they get heated up a tremendous amount by hitting the atmosphere, and they're also being punched by the atmosphere. And at some point between the heat and the pressure, the asteroid explodes into many pieces. And when this thing exploded, it went off with the force of a hydrogen bomb. And it rained stuff down. I think 1,500 people were injured in Russia. And it broke windows and everything. And it did a lot of damage. And this was just a relatively small meteor or asteroid that was coming in, and it wasn't a particularly heavy one. The ones that are really do damage are big, like the one that killed the dinosaurs was 6 miles across, and the one that's up in Canada, they figure that was made of iron. And when an iron meteorite or an iron asteroid comes flying in, it doesn't break up like that. It hits. And it's a solid piece of iron, and there it goes. And part of the reason why these things are so different like this is the asteroids, the way the asteroids formed is still not perfectly understood. But the iron ones really look like they were at the center of a differentiated body. Not a planet, because there's not enough of them to be a planet, but a body that had started to differentiate. And it started, you know, the heavier elements go sink down to the bottom and the lighter ones stay up at the top. It's like a drink, you know. And so some of these things that come in are from the tops of whatever was forming. And in the early solar system, a lot of different things formed that never became planets. And so you get sometimes the crust that comes in and it's not strong. It never had a lot of gravity because it's not like here where you've got enormous amounts of gravity. We have sedimentary rock that is really hard. And in these other places, it never quite got that way because it didn't have enough gravity to squeeze things down. So you have a lot of asteroids that are made of varying things. I've mentioned the iron, and that's at the center. And it's just the nature of iron that when you get it, you know, at all put together there, it's strong. But then you also have things like most of the meteors you see when you go out and look at a meteor shower, they are about the consistency of cigar ash. So they're not dangerous at all. They're, you know, they're coming in very fast, but they hit the atmosphere and they make a streak, and that's what you get. You can sometimes hear something. There can be something, you know, you can hear, but that's not usual. But and so you got cigar ash, and that doesn't hurt anything. And some asteroids are what are referred to as rubble piles, which is a lot of just rock, and it's not stuck together. It's just, here's a rock, there's a rock, and they're next to each other, and so on. And a lot of dust and crap, and they're really hardly a solid object. And so you have these differentiated things. Then you got some that are rock that are pretty big. And so, this is all a lot of different things, and there's still research being done on them. But that was noticed some years ago that, we're in the middle of a lot of near-Earth objects. So they're looking to say, what could we do if one is coming at us and is going to be a problem? We saw a couple of movies that were made years ago. And, of course, it was all boy-girl and all of this stuff. And, how do we stop this asteroid? Well, we shoot Bruce Willis at it, and that stops the asteroid. And, you know, another one where, somebody has daddy issues, and she stands on the beach and gets killed with him. Never made any goddamn sense to me.
It made total sense to me. That was the girl's disaster movie. Other one was the boy's disaster movie.
Well, yes. They were both stupid.
I think the girl's was better than the boy's.
It might have been because they had the advantage of not having Bruce Willis in the movie. Anyway, so they're trying to figure out what to do. Besides the fact that they are funded now because finally they got idiots in Congress to say, oh yeah, maybe it's a good idea to know where these dangerous things are. And so they're funded to watch them, although they haven't seen enough of them yet. So what they've done is they launched this DART mission, and it sends a 1,200-pound spacecraft that's going to go around the sun, and then it's going to slam into a small asteroid named Dimorphos. It's going to hit it at 15,000 miles an hour next year. And so they're going to see what happens with that. They don't know for sure because they're not sure how it's made up, what kind of an asteroid Dimorphos is. And we had all sorts of things of how is this going to ever happen. And in 2005, Congress assigned NASA the imperative of protecting the planet from dangerous objects. Maybe that was a good idea. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Anyway, what NASA does is now they're in charge of tracking tens of thousands of near-Earth asteroids that are large enough to cause a problem if they smack us. And NASA's Near-Earth Object Observations Program is ongoing, and it's funded, as I said. God, so short-sighted, some of these people. And the DART space probe is going to visit Dimorphos and another asteroid, Didymos, in September or October 2022. And Dimorphos is the smaller of the pair, and they form a binary system. They're orbiting around each other. And Dimorphos is smaller, and it's orbiting the asteroid Didymos, and it's a satellite. It's a satellite, and it orbits at a distance of about 1 mile from each other. and they complete a revolution every 11 hours and 55 minutes. So they're just whipping around each other out there in outer space. And Dimorphos is not a threat to the planet Earth. It's not a threat, but they don't want to wait until they have to do it to do it. So they say, let's see if we can knock something around. And there have been all kinds of things that have been proposed for this. And actually, Dimorphos is, they say in the New York Times that it's about the size of the one of the pyramids of Giza. And it's going to be the smallest celestial body ever visited by a spacecraft. It's not big at all. And Andy Rivkin, the DART investigation team leader at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory, and they're managing the mission, says, quote, from an engineering point of view, this is really hard, unquote. And basically, they're going to get a single shot at hitting Dimorphos, and it's going to have to be done on a fully automated basis that begins 4 hours before impact. So it's not going to be a thing if where somebody's going to be able to drive it in, because it's going to be, I don't know how far away it'll be from Earth. It'll be a number of certainly light minutes away, and you can't have that kind of a delay and get something to work for you. So 10 days before impact, DART will deploy a small satellite built by an Italian space agency, and the DART spacecraft's onboard camera, Draco, will snap photos of the asteroid as it approaches, streaming them back to Earth up until 20 seconds before impact. What they're going to do is see what happens, because they're not sure. Again, is it solid? Is it like the consistency of cigar ash? Is it a rubble pile? What's going to happen when this thing hits? They're not sure. And if the asteroid's orbit is sped up by at least 73 seconds, shortening the time it takes to revolve around Didymos, the mission will be a success, Dr. Rivkin says. And he says, quote, we think the actual amount will be something like 10 minutes, unquote. So that would be, you know, that would be a difference. That would be something serious there. Instead of 12 hours, 55 minutes, it might 11 hours, 55 minutes. It might be 11 hours, 45 minutes or 12 hours and 10 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that. Anyway, changing it will have an effect, because it will also have an effect on Didymos, because these two are gravitationally bound. And, of course, they don't know, as I said, about the composition of Dimorphos. Could be this thing's going to hit and sail through it, but ugh. Anyway, there's also a proposal, if they have to have a fleet of several impactor spacecraft that could be used to alter a big asteroid's course, because they've been looking at this for some years. Another idea is to use a gravity tractor, where they would take a satellite that weighs a lot and sort of park it near an asteroid, and they would interact gravitationally, and instead of smacking into the asteroid, the gravity tractor would be near the asteroid and would attract it a little bit. That would divert it somewhat, and then it would fire some rockets and go a good distance away, the proper distance away, and keep on pulling it that way, using gravity as if it were a chain to pull it out of the trajectory that it had that was heading for Earth. So there's that. And basically, with NASA's current capabilities, it's going to take about 30 years, by the way, at the rate they're going right now, to complete the near-Earth asteroid catalog, which is that important thing that's going to get us to say, hey, look at this. In fact, there's a computer game named Rage, which is based on the idea that the asteroid Apophis is going to hit the planet Earth in the next century. And, you know, yeah. and then video game happens. But that's probably not going to happen now. They were thinking that was, but not going to happen. And a future spacecraft is going to be launched with a massive infrared telescope, and it's called the Neo Surveyor. Neo not referencing a Matrix movie, but near-Earth object. Neo Surveyor, and it's going to launch in 2026 to speed up the task of seeing these asteroids that could, in fact, be dangerous for us. So there are all these different ideas they have. Some of them are part of science fiction movies, and they're going to test one. Next year, they actually do a test to see if one of these ideas will work. And it's important stuff. I mean, we get smacked by a big enough asteroid, we're screwed. Of course, if something comes in out of interstellar space, it could be huge, and we'd never see it in time, and we'd be doomed. And, of course, we could also get something. If there really are very small black holes, we could never, ever see it until it's really close. And it wouldn't have to hit the Earth to devastate us. It would just have to enter the solar system and start moving things around. Or if it came close to the Earth, it could just suck the atmosphere out and we'd all smother. But anyway.
Oh, happy holidays, folks.
Yeah. That's the way I think. Well, that has been it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back here next week with more stuff to talk about. And coming up next is...
Coming up next is a special. And then at 7 a.m. is the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund has now moved to Sunday mornings from 6 to 8.
So you're going to get on Sunday morning science fiction stuff. Okay, thanks a hell of a lot for listening. And you should, look at those December twilights. They're special. They're like no other time of the year in December. And look at those and say, yeah, it's a compensation. The sun is setting too early, but the December twilights can be quite beautiful. And above all, remember what that keeping his eye on those damned asteroids, Dormouse said. Light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day. You drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but it's got no soul, and it's taking you so long.
week on WBAI Playhouse, Saturday, December 4th at 8 p.m., the story of how a brilliant but reticent astronomer was coaxed out of retirement by a mysterious young mathematician.
Here's Ptolemy.
I have read Ptolemy, of course. Every astronomer has read Ptolemy.
You read a Latin translation from the Arabic or the Hebrew. This is the original Greek text.
Oh.
Only recently recovered and now published for the first time.
Let me just have a look at that.
And this is Euclid's Geometry, also in Greek. And here is Regiomontanus on triangles.
And the story reveals the revolution they brought about together.
All the stars moved. I could see them spinning round and round.
No, the stars didn't move.
It was wonderful.
Hey, that was you going around, not the stars.
No, I saw that the stars turned around me.
You turned in that little seat. That's the only part that moves.
Robert Foxworth stars as Nicholas Copernicus, Michael Kirby as Reticus in the drama And the Sun Stood Still by Dava Sobel. Saturday, 8 p.m. on WBAI Playhouse, right here on listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York.
November 8, 2021 is the notice date to propose Pacifica Bylaws Amendments. The proposed amendments may be found on the Foundation's website.